I don't know what sort of week you've had at your house this past week. At our household, it hasn't gone all that well. For one thing, Sydney and I are not really winter people. We like to get outdoors and do things, and the weather hasn't been very conducive to that. In addition, this flu bug has visited our home, and that's not a lot of fun either. And Sydney's not even here this morning because she's been stricken with that, and I had a touch of it earlier in the week. But by far, the hardest thing to cope with was news we got regarding a young man who had been an intern with me when I was the senior minister at First Methodist downtown. His name is Alan Zugelter. Alan was raised in Missouri, from Missouri. In fact, he was an attorney there in his late 20s when he decided that he was being called by God to enter ordained ministry. In other words, he walked away from a thriving legal practice to come down here to Dallas and attend Perkins School of Theology to become a United Methodist minister. It was while Alan was here at Perkins that I became aware of his presence. I interviewed him and we hired him downtown in order to be an intern in the Lilly internship program that we had. And so I had the privilege of being a mentor to him, of listening to him preach and critiquing him. Sydney was on his lay committee of lay people that would offer him advice. Alan was so cerebral and so bright and intelligent, and his committee was encouraging him to loosen up just a little bit, be a little more personable, try to be warm in addition to being so bright and so smart. And so after 2 years, he completed our internship, and we were delighted to hear that the bishop in Missouri thought so much of him and gave credence to our program that he was given an exceptional appointment to an exceptional church there in the state of Missouri, United Methodist Church, Liberty United Methodist Church. And so Alan called me a few times, wanted some advice on some things, but everything that I'd heard about his ministry was that it was thriving and he was doing very well. And then after about 2 years, we got word that he'd been diagnosed with leukemia. Just out of nowhere, leukemia, and it was a rare strain of leukemia. And in my pastoral ministry with leukemia, it starts one way and then it can turn the other and becomes terminal ultimately. But Alan seemed to have time and promise, but that began to slip away until finally the doctors told him there was nothing else they could do. If he wanted to try experimental protocols, he and his wife Ashley came through Dallas on their way to MD Anderson a few months ago to try an experimental protocol. But we received word this past week that Alan had passed away. In fact, Elliot and Joy Gonzalez are from that church, members of our staff, and they went back to Missouri to attend that funeral this weekend. And so in trying to come to grips with that, you know, it's hard on many levels because Alan was a friend, he was a colleague, but also on a professional level, to have been a minister who's had the privilege of preaching for some 32 years. You know, possibly in the course of that recycling a few stories, I'm not sure, but I bet Sydney could tell you. And yet to have a young man with so much to offer and so much knowledge and so much intelligence, and Alan got to maybe preach 2 years at most before his life was taken from him. I do remember that when it came time to replace Alan, he had been our second intern. We said, you know, we need to have a third. Would you recommend anybody over at Perkins? And he said, let me think about that. He came back to me the next day and he said, yeah, I've got a name for you, a guy from Georgia by the name of Matt Tuggle. I want to talk to you about Matt a little more in a minute. But first of all, let me share with you our scripture this morning. Found out of the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 34, verses 1 through 4. Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him the whole land, Gilead as far as Dan, and all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the Negeb and the plain. That is the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. The Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. May the Lord bless the reading of this word. Moses had been the reluctant prophet, remember? When God had appeared to him in the burning bush and God had commanded him to go and to speak to Pharaoh, it was Moses who said, "Well, why would you ask me? I don't have credentials." Nevertheless, God assured him, "If you'll just do what I tell you to do, we'll somehow be able to pull it off." And Moses did that. Moses managed to lead the Exodus, to lead the people out of oppression in Egypt, to lead them wandering in the wilderness some 40 years now, receiving the Ten Commandments, leading the people, dealing with them when they became disobedient. Sometimes they even wanted to go back, to the flesh pots of Egypt. But Moses hung in there. So you have a sense that, you know, he's got this marvelous destiny. He'll be escorting the people into the promised land, and what a great party they'll have, and what a great celebration, and certainly there'll be an awards ceremony or whatever. And Moses comes to realize, because God tells him, that God is going to take him up on the mountain, and God's going to show him the promised land. But God is not going to let him go into the promised land. He'll show it, but God won't be able to accompany the people. That will be Joshua. Joshua will accompany. Joshua will become the new leader. And Moses will pass away. It's an interesting transition. I did my Doctor of Ministry project on the leadership of a senior minister to lead a people of God in a large church. And I found myself referencing Moses time and time again. A lot of when his father-in-law Jethro called him to account and said, "What do you think you're doing? You know, Moses, the thing is too heavy for you. You've got to learn to delegate. Good leaders delegate." But the truth of the matter is, in leadership, leading any organization or any group of people, you never really get to the promised land as long as the organization continues. There always is a transitioning, a handing off of the baton, if you will. Martin Luther King, on April the 3rd, 1968, was in Memphis at a church, and he referenced Moses and the idea of going up the mountain and seeing the promised land. And then he made a prediction. He said that he would not be able to go to the promised land with the people, but that he would be there in spirit. And sure enough, the next day, he was assassinated. And we hold his memory dear as we honor him tomorrow with the holiday. Passing the baton is an art. It can be done gracefully, or it can be done clumsily. In the Olympics, Athens 2004, the United States women's relay team, everybody knew was the fastest team. They had broken all the records. Everybody knew it was really a moot point. The only question was, how much would they win the race? But in the second leg, Marion Jones and Lauren Williams had to exchange the baton. And Lauren Williams was running ahead and put her hand back to receive the baton, and they fumbled it. They didn't drop it, but they fumbled it. She couldn't get the baton. Finally, when Marion Jones got it in her hand, they had exceeded the 20-meter box in which you have to make the exchange, and they were disqualified. Totally disqualified because they weren't able to exchange the baton. When you look at the transfer of authority, it can be done clumsily, it can be done with grace, it can be effective. look at players. When I was a kid, Joe Namath was a hero. Joe Namath with the New York Jets, they won the Super Bowl. He beat Johnny Unitas, my other hero, of the Baltimore Colts in the third Super Bowl. Joe had a really bad knee. He had an opportunity to go out on top, but what did he do? He allowed himself to be traded to the Los Angeles Rams. The vision of Namath wearing a Rams jersey, sitting on the edge of the bench, hunched over, that was just an anathema. It just couldn't be. Or these coaches, Joe Paterno, with all of the chaos and all of the stigma now attached to the Penn State program by virtue of his inability to administer it wisely and with diligence. And the image of Bobby Bowden on the side of Florida State, the field goal, once again going wide right and seeing an assistant coach having to explain to him as he asked, "What happened?" He said, "Coach, it was wide right." And you realize he was coaching. He was the head coach really just in name only, because he was hanging on. Why? To break the record. He wanted to beat Joe Paterno. They were in competition to get the record to win. Look at our leading politicians nowadays. What is the average age? Is it any wonder that young people aren't plugged in and engaged? My goodness. Politics, by its very nature, is about power and holding on to power. So maybe it's hard to do to turn loose and give up of power. And the same thing with preachers. Sometimes preachers hold on a little too long. Sometimes transitions can be done in a delicate and graceful fashion, other times not. In my tenure in the Methodist Army, I've had an opportunity 6 different times to stand up in the pulpit and announce that I was leaving a church. This morning, I don't have to do that. I simply want you to be aware that my responsibilities are going to be realigned. Let me talk to you about my role since I came here. Arguably, the pinnacle of my career, if there is such a thing in ministry, was my 16 years at First Methodist Church. I was shocked when Mark Craig and Paul Rasmussen appeared at my office door downtown and came and wanted to talk to me about coming to this church. I just said, "Well, why? And why do you need me? And doesn't the bishop make appointments?" I learned, no, the bishop doesn't make appointments. Mark Craig made appointments. And over a course of months, we talked about, you know, what I would do and why they'd want me here. And it was clear to me that there was a role here for a gray hair, for lack of a better word. You know, gravitas is really just Latin for gray hair. There was a role here. You know, I think Paul thought he needed a wingman for the transition to become senior minister. In retrospect, he didn't need a wingman at all. But there was a role here for somebody to perhaps preach the 11 o'clock service and provide a little bit of stability. And so I was happy to come here and perform that role. I didn't have any delusions about that. If you were looking for the future of Highland Park United Methodist Church, you wouldn't go and find somebody 5 years younger than Mark Craig, who had just retired. I was not the future of Highland Park Methodist, but I was here to perform a role, and I was happy to do that. Now, there was the possibility to be a specialist. This is an amazing church. It's so big. If you want to be, you can be a minister and specialize in something. But I see my clergy colleagues there in the sanctuary, and you know there's something about specialization that goes against the grain. That's not how we were trained. That's not our sense of calling. We want to be generalists. We want to teach. We want to do funerals. We want to do weddings. We want to visit hospitals. We want to do it all. That's kind of who we are. And so I found myself sort of volunteering to do different things. It wasn't called, Paul never said, "John, you've got to help with the capital campaign." But I volunteered to get involved with the Beyond campaign, and it was such an exciting experience. And I volunteered to do weddings and to do funerals. And I volunteered, when Paul asked me, to be the director of the Mark Craig Leadership Initiative. And I've been doing that, and right now we have 5 interns, 5 young people, ranging in a huge range of experience and age, but 5 young people that we're mentoring to help them build effective skills to be leaders in the church. And so with all of that going on, you know, it has come time for me to no longer preach. I will no longer be the 11 o'clock preacher. I will have other responsibilities. I'm not going anywhere. I just will be able to focus more and give the time that is required, time and energy, to the Mark Craig Leadership Initiative. In addition, I'll continue with development and doing some congregational care. So that's my new adjustment in my responsibilities. Let me tell you the exciting news. Your new preacher is going to be Reverend Matt Tuggle. Let me tell you a little bit about Matt. Matt came from Georgia. He went to Perkins School of Theology. He was, we go over and we sort of cherry pick the students at Perkins, and he was chosen to come here and be our minister of family ministries. And he's done an excellent job, and it's been exciting to watch Matt grow. He already has a great deal of talent. I've been impressed with Matt because his best friend is Andrew Forrest, who's done phenomenal work over at Munger Place. Andrew has gone over there and, you know, he turned a church that was averaging 50 on Sunday morning. They're now averaging, 5 years after he's taken it over as the pastor in charge, they're averaging over 1,000 at Munger Place. And that's a tribute to you and your generosity and your stewardship, that we can take an old superannuated Methodist church and turn it around and transform it. And Andrew was doing that, and of course, along with that is a lot of recognition and a lot of visibility. And there Matt is, his best friend, not so much. You know, he's doing family ministries, but he's not getting that adulation or whatever. And I said to myself, a lesser person would be envious. A lesser person will go, well, what about me? When do I get my opportunity? But I've never seen Matt do that. He's just been patient. He's just done what he's been asked to do. Last year, he was asked to start an 11 o'clock chapel service in Cox Chapel, which he did, and they're already overcrowded and busting at the seams. It holds about 150 congregants, and they're averaging that right now. And so we've made the decision that Matt would come in and be the 11 o'clock preacher, and that he would invite his Cox Chapel congregation to come in and be a part of the 11 o'clock sanctuary congregation. So I wanted you to be aware of that, and let me tell you what the timetable is. On January the 28th, our senior minister, Paul Rasmussen, will come in, and Matt will be in the service, I'll be in the service, and Paul will preach, and he's going to kind of do a state of the church message here at 11 o'clock. And then the following Sunday, February the 4th, I will be preaching, Matt will be in the service, and then February the 11th, Matt will begin preaching. He is an excellent preacher. He likes to tell people that I've helped to mentor him, and I'll take all the credit I can get, but I only made one suggestion to him, and it was about the way that he used his hands, and that was 4 years ago. The rest he's done on his own. So he is excellent. Matt is such a sincere young man, and Susan, I know he is so sincere. I mean, he was a Boy Scout. His father worked for the Boy Scouts. He probably became an Eagle Scout, and he just radiates sincerity. He's the genuine thing, and he's such a witness to the Christian faith, and I think he's going to be a real force for Christianity and United Methodism for the next 40 years, So I'm excited about that, and I invite you to be excited about that also. Now, let me talk to you about transitions, what it takes to have a successful, effective transition. First of all, don't make it about you, especially if you're United Methodist clergy. The Wesleyan tradition, our covenant, is that we are to go where we're sent. You know, if you look at it in a systematic fashion, Wesley kind of saw clergy as interchangeable cogs, and that can be overdone. You know, when a young circuit rider went to, and who was the bishop back then, Susan, the first Methodist bishop? Asbury, Francis Asbury. He complained to Asbury, he said, you've got me running around all over the place on these circuits so much, I don't have time to court and get married. And you know what Asbury's one word response was? Good. The system isn't designed for your comfort level. We want you to serve the church. But from generation to generation, we've got to understand that, you know, just like Moses and to Joshua, there comes a time when you've got to pass on, yes, the privilege, I suppose, of being in representative ministry, but also the responsibility. And it's a huge responsibility. If you were to go to First Methodist Church of Hearst, in Hearst, Texas, in the mid-cities, They have a hallway where you have the pictures of all the senior ministers, and you would see going to the period 1992 to 97, there would be a picture of a baby-faced young guy, certainly with no gray hair. It just looked like a kid, and it's got my name underneath it. I don't look like that kid anymore. Something happened. I think it's got something to do with the heavy responsibility of ministry. There comes a time when it is right and it's important and vital to pass on to the younger generation. And when that doesn't happen, things don't go well. I have a vivid memory as I was coming up through the system. In the Central Texas Conference, they have a wonderful tradition. The retired ministers at annual conference, at the worship service, they go down with their stoles, and then they take off their stoles, and they put their stoles around the necks of the men and women who have just become ordained. And it is a powerful transfer of authority. And yet, there was a colleague and a friend of mine, Roy Bassett. Roy was retiring, and the last appointment he had gotten from the bishop, he was very disappointed in, to the point of being angry. And when he was invited to go down, he refused to participate in this ritual of transfer of responsibility. So I was in the balcony of the Austin Avenue Methodist Church in Waco, Texas, and I looked up, and there were all the retired ministers down on the floor, but up there in the balcony with me was Roy Bassett and his wife, Mary. And Roy sat there with his arms folded, and Mary was weeping. His wife was weeping tears. That he, not only that he wasn't down there, but that he wasn't participating in the spirit of what it means to pass it on and to turn loose and to give up. Don't make it about you, make it about the team. How many of you watched the Alabama game on Monday evening? Some of you may have been rooting for Bama, others for Georgia. It looked like Georgia was going to win that game at halftime. The young quarterback for Bama, Jalen Hurts, he'd won 25 games and only lost two, but he was not moving the offense. And Nick Saban, the Bama coach, made a very hard decision. He pulled the starting quarterback to put in, and I'm going to mispronounce this, to put in the backup quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. Tagovailoa, I believe that's how you pronounce it, the backup quarterback who apparently could throw the ball a little bit better. He put in the second string quarterback, and all of a sudden the entire offense was galvanized, energized, and Bama won the game in a dramatic fashion during overtime. And you could tell the coverage, they kept showing the sidelines and showing Jalen Hurts, the starting quarterback who was no longer playing. And you know what they were angling for. They wanted that human drama. They wanted to show the privileged, high-profile athlete with his arms crossed, kind of looking in disappointment because his replacement was doing well. But that's not what they got, and that's not what you saw as the viewer. Jalen Hurts was his biggest fan. That was his friend, his colleague, his teammate out there, and he was doing well, and he was cheering him on. And afterwards, they couldn't help but interview Jalen Hurts and said, well, what was that about? I mean, you're competitive. How could you stand by and let somebody else win the game and feel good about it? And Hurts said, you know, I was just going to be who I am. I needed to be who I am, and I'm a member of this team, and I'm a leader on this team. And that was what I felt I needed to do. One of the joys of being here at Highland Park United Methodist is getting to know Paul Rasmussen. Paul is now not just a colleague, but he's a close friend of mine. And I love working with him, and I will continue to work with him. Matt Tuggle is a friend of mine. All of the clergy people here are friends and colleagues, and I love that closeness. And nothing will get in between us. But I can't help but think of the country and western song that has the title, How Can I Miss You If You'll Never Go Away? What's the use of preparing these young people and listening and grading and critiquing their sermons if we're not willing to step aside and give them an opportunity to preach? The real deal, not the rehearsal, but the real deal. And so I feel honored in that it's the right thing to step aside willingly. You know, Jim Moore was the substitute preacher when I got here. I'd known Jim from way back, and about 2 months ago, I went up to play golf with Jim at Heritage Ranch, and we were playing, and I told him about the transition that was coming up, and I said, Jim, I've got one goal in this thing, and my goal is that I can be as gracious to Matt Tuggle and as inviting and supportive to Matt Tuggle as you and June have been to me as I've come to this church. God said to Moses, I have let you see it. I have let you see it. And it's been a privilege to see where this church is heading. And I look forward to listening to Paul's State of the Church sermon as he shares, as we're moving beyond as a result of this huge infusion of capital that your generosity has made possible. There are so many possibilities. This church is so amazing. It's a privilege just to be a part of it. So I look forward to that, and I remind you, this is what's going to happen. Next Sunday will be just the same. I look forward to preaching and writing another sermon. I think I can honestly say that I've never phoned it in here, never used an old sermon, and I can also honestly say preaching is hard work. You know, as a medium, it is a tyrant. You finish at 12 o'clock, you hear the carillon, and a voice in your head says, that was good, now do it again. And it's a solitary discipline that pulls you away from your family and other people. I've been doing it for 35 years. I look forward to some of the new possibilities in not preaching every Sunday. But next Sunday will be the same. Then the 28th, Paul will be preaching. Then February the 4th, I'll be preaching. And they tell me there's going to be a little reception afterwards, which is kind of a misnomer because Sydney and I aren't going anywhere. You know, but if we can have a little reception, and it'll give us an opportunity to thank you for your supportiveness and your presence. And then the following Sunday, Matt Tuggle will be in this pulpit, and you'll have an opportunity to hear Matt. So that's what's going to happen. Let me tell you what's not going to happen, because in this age of disinformation and lack of clarity, sometimes that's even more important. What's not going to happen is the worship format for this service is not going to change. Dr. Alan Raines is going to continue to have the marvelous traditional music. Our chancel choir will continue to do exactly the amazing job that they do Sunday in and Sunday out. That's not going to change. You don't need to worry about that. They understand, and Matt understands the traditions of this church. Matt was raised in a traditional United Methodist worship format. He gets it, and he looks great in a robe, too. He looks young, and I hate him for that. So that's not going to happen. So they say people respond to expectations. So let me share my expectations with you. I don't have authority, I can't coerce you, but let me invite you to these expectations. First of all, don't cry for me, Argentina, okay? I am grateful to have had this opportunity. Yes, I'm a little sad because it's been such a joy to be with you. So I get that, but I'm in a great place. I'm working at a great church with great people. And I will continue to serve. The truth of the matter is, this realignment of my responsibilities will probably extend my ministry career. So I look forward to that. I'm in a great place. Don't do me the disservice of painting me as a victim somehow, or someone's a villain, or someone's a victim, and a hero is needed to swoop in and rescue, because that is just not the case. Secondly, rest assured that your faith needs and your worship needs are foremost with Paul and the rest of the clergy. We will continue to strive to make sure that you have a worship experience that is meaningful to you and transformational. And so we will continue to strive to do that. And then I want to challenge you to welcome the chapel people when they come. That'll be on the 28th. So, of course, you'll want to get here early and stake down your place in the pew. Get the good seats in advance. I mean, that's fair, isn't it, Susan? Okay, that's fair. You can get here early and do that. But when the chapel folks come, welcome them. You know, this is their sanctuary also. One of the proud traditions of our church is we've always said to new members, you have just as much place and privilege and entitlement here as a 40-year member. You're welcome, and we're delighted that you're here. So let's not do the food chain thing, the hierarchy thing, but instead let's be welcoming. Most of them will be younger people. Matt draws the younger people. And what a great gift that will be for the 11 o'clock sanctuary service. Let's welcome the chapel people. And finally, let's welcome Matt. He is a very talented young man, and he's going to do a wonderful job. So come and listen, embrace him, knowing that as you embrace him, you're also embracing the future of Methodism. Because my sisters and brothers, the future is now. The future is now. And I can stand along with you, and I can say, we can see it. We can see the promised land. We can see the future of the people of God known as Highland Park United Methodist Church. And you know what? It's looking pretty bright. Amen.